So my original publicized title for this sermon was The Sacrifice in Transformation. But I quickly realized that sacrifice wasn't quite the word that I was looking for. I was trying too hard to match last week's sermon, which was The Surrender in Transformation. So I was looking for that S word and came with sacrifice, surrender, sacrifice. But what I'm really talking about is more, like I've said, that middle time in the process of transformation. Think of a caterpillar. Did you know that a caterpillar, in its process of transforming into a butterfly, first, in the chrysalis, dissolves itself? And here we have a phoenix rising from the ashes. And I'll tell a bit the story of this quilt, and if those, some of you who have been there here longer than me would like to elaborate it on it or do any corrections after I'm finished, I'll invite you to do so. So this quilt has been a part of this church for some time, and it was inspired by the fire that happened to our original building over on A Street. The church burned in a fire, and the congregation was very small, so they came to a place where they had to decide whether or not to continue and somehow rebuild or to cut their losses and dissolve. They decided, thankfully, to continue, and soon there came an offer, a good offer of money, for the land that they had. So they sold that land, bought this land, and built this building, a phoenix rising from the ashes. And you may not know that down here, in this barely visible white thread, is what you might say is the ghost of the old building, right here. And when this quilt was created, each member put in at least one stitch. So there's a few things I know I've forgotten, but anything that anyone would like to lift up who's been here longer about this quilt? Beverly. Yeah. So member Travis Beckham designed this, and Ann Hicks, who comes many Sundays but's not here today, laid it out, and everyone sewed. And Beverly put some stitches here. Thanks, Beverly. So often we see the beauty of the phoenix, and we forget that in this middle part, there was fire, there was burning, there was ashes. We know this about our own lives, of course. So yesterday, for our chalkboard announcements, I was erasing the word sacrifice and trying to correct the title of the sermon. And again, getting stuck on trying to find an S word. And I confess, I almost put, well, it's the, excuse my language, the sucky part in transformation. And there's another S word that's slightly more of a curse word that I could use, but I personally try not to curse from the pulpit as much as possible. Apologies if even that was too far. So today we're talking about this middle part in the process of transformation because we are entering two different religious seasons that both have to do with this middle part of transformation. Passover is the Jewish season that we are about to enter, and Christian Holy Week, which begins today with Palm Sunday. So first I'll talk about Passover. The Jewish people celebrate Passover as a commemoration of their liberation by God from slavery in Egypt and their freedom as a nation under the leadership of Moses. So some of you may be familiar with this story or parts of this story. It's in the book of Exodus in the Bible. You may be familiar with the image of the parting of the Red Seas. So the Israelites were able to go through the Red Seas to the other side because of the parting. And then as Pharaoh's soldiers chased them to bring them back into slavery, the waters crashed in. so the Israelites were able to go free. And as the story goes, once they were safely upon the other shore, they didn't yet see that promised land, but instead they saw the wide expanse of the desert. And they ended up being in that desert for 40 years. Back then, you may live a good life of a long life of 40 years. You may be born and die and still be in the desert, not yet to that beautiful promised land. So they found themselves in this desert feeling guilty because they were dreaming, yearning to go back to their time of slavery, to the comforts of the familiar. They were bickering among themselves. They found themselves full of doubts, even after sweet manna came from the sky to feed them, a gift from God. They had uncertainty and discomfort, a true time in the wilderness. So that middle part is not fun. Christian Holy Week, in particular, I'd like to talk about Good Friday. So Good Friday, good is a strange choice of words because depending on how you see it, what happened on Good Friday was really very, very bad. Good Friday, of course, is the day, as you may know, that Jesus was crucified. To say that he died is an understatement because what happened is he was crucified by the Roman Empire. So basically capital punishment. The cross of that time is like the electric chair of our time. So that's definitely a middle time. Jesus' followers were like, this is not what we were hoping for. And in Christian circles, they talk about how you cannot celebrate Easter Sunday, which we will celebrate in this church next week, without acknowledging Good Friday first. It's like wanting to just skip over all the messy parts of life and just get right to the celebration. So just to enjoy springtime without the winter or life without death or joy without grief. So talking some more about Jesus' death and the theology of the cross is treacherous territory. Among Christians, there are many diverse and very fervently held beliefs about what the cross means, about what happened when Jesus died and then was raised from the dead. The Christian view from which I personally draw the most wisdom is the view that God did not call for Jesus' death. God, in this view, is not up there looking down, directing the scene, but God is there as Jesus on the cross, a victim of capital punishment by the Roman Empire. So in this view, God revealed God's self to humanity as Jesus, and everything that you read in the Bible about how Jesus's life kind of fits with the end of his life. He was about love. He hung out with the lowly, with the prostitutes, with the sinners, with the masses of unwashed. He comes into life as a baby, born to poor parents. So Jesus' ethic was about revolutionizing our ethic of power and control and vengeance and an eye for an eye. He said, it was as if he was saying, my world is so much about love that yes, I'm going to let you do this to me, but even in this, I'm going to respond with love and vulnerability. Forgive them, he said from the cross. They know not what they do. So even if you are not a theist or a Christian, I believe that all of us can draw meaning from the Jewish story and this Christian story, because it's a message that is timeless. The fact of God being all-powerful in this story is not as important as God being all-vulnerable and all-loving. And the Unitarians and the Universalists believed, historically, that we were to emulate God. So for us to search not after power, but after vulnerability and love, forgiveness. Even when Jesus is raised from the dead on Sunday, he has wounds and scars. So God is there in the middle. Right there in the middle, in that dark, messy place of fire and ashes and loss and suffering in our lives. Likewise in the Hebrew Bible, and I love the Hebrew Bible, that's what many scholars call the Old Testament, because the stories are just messy and mucky. All these humans that are in God's Bible are adulterers and sinners, and the blessing of God is always found in the human's frailties, in doubt and wrestling with the angel and arguing with God. So I think there's a message here for all of us. The Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl, in his book Man's Search for Meaning, which some of the humanists or atheists among you might relate more to, Viktor Frankl says, there may be no meaning to the suffering that we endure, but we always have the freedom of choice in how we act within that suffering. And that holding before us, staying rooted in the contemplation of love and hope, enables us to endure. So Paul Tillich, the theologian, would call this our ultimate concern. It's all about how we stay oriented to our ultimate concern, God or love or truth or reason. I think for Unitarian Universalists, if we look to our history, for us a baseline, our ultimate concern would be the power of moral reason, which we especially get from the Unitarians, and the power of love, which we get from the Universalists. Of course, the early Unitarians and the early Universalists were Christians, and some of us are still Christian, but not all of us are, but we can still carry through that thread of moral reason and love. I'd say that's what drew most of us to Unitarian Universalism. And in truth, I think what enables us in these dark, messy middle times to stay rooted to our ultimate concern is relationship, community. So I'd like us to do now a communal reading that will serve as kind of a meditation on how in times, in those middle times, those messy, dark times, we can use relationship and community to stay rooted to our deepest values. So if you feel so moved, I'd invite you to open your hymnal to 632 in the back. This is a reading by Alla Renee Bozarth, who was a woman who wanted to be ordained in one of the Christian denominations. I can't remember now which one. And she was not allowed, but she stayed in her own ministry for some time. So this is Passover Remembered. And the way I'd like to do this is just for us to read one little stanza or a paragraph at a time. And just if you feel so moved to read the next stanza, just read it from your seat. And I'll read the last three. And it may be that there's a little bit of silence in between stanzas as we figure out who's going to read, or some people talk at the same time, but we'll just go with it. So if you feel so moved, I'd invite someone to read that first.
Pack nothing. Bring only your determination to serve and your willingness to be free. Don't wait for the bread to rise. Take nourishment for the journey and keep standing. Be ready to move at a moment's notice.
Do not hesitate to leave your old way behind. Fear, silence, submission. Only surrender to the need of the time.
Songs as you go and hold close together. You may at times grow confused and lose your way. Touch each other and keep telling the story. Make maps as you go, remembering the way back from where you were born.
So you will be only the first of many waves of deliverance on these desert seas.
It is the first of many beginnings, your paschal tide. Remain true to this mystery. Pass on the whole story. Do not go back. I am with you now, and I am waiting for you. So that last line, I am with you now, and I am waiting for you. I would say that that I, according to how you believe, may be your ultimate concern. I am with you now, and I am waiting for you. It may be God, or capital L, love, or the beautiful process working inside that caterpillar that becomes a butterfly. In our middle times, may we always catch enough glimpses of that ultimate concern to sustain us. And may the strength of our relationships help us to do so. I'd like to close with this blessing by Jan Richardson. She calls it Blessing the Desert. Ask me what this blessing sounds like, and I will tell you about the wind that hollows everything it finds. I will tell you about locusts who chose this night to offer their awful rasping song. I will tell you about rock faces and how it sounds when what was sturdy and solid suddenly shears away. But give me long enough, and I will tell you also how beneath the wind, a silence, not of absence or of agony that leaves all speechless and stricken when it comes, but a silence of rest, of dreaming, of the seed that knows its season, and the wordless canticle of stars that will not cease their singing even when we cannot bear to hear. May it be so.